You're listening to From Illumination to Innovation, a revealing and provocative exploration of the rapidly shifting landscape of values, purpose, leadership, and culture, both corporate and social. I'm your host, Stephanie Crane.
And I'm your host, Shaniqua Brown. We're excited to have you join us as we shine a light on new perspectives, amplify voices of influence, and elevate bright ideas that will expand your idea of what's possible in business and beyond.
Welcome back to From Illumination to Innovation. I'm your co-host, Shaniqua Brown, the founder of Elevated TA.
And I'm your co-host, Stephanie Crane. I am founder of Topos Innovation, and I am extremely excited about our topic today. We are going to be talking about leadership styles and innovation, and we have brought two fantastic experts in to have this conversation with us. I'm going to read because I'm not that like, okay. So we have David Greenspan. David is the founder of Blue Case Strategic Partners, and which is a leadership strategic planning firm and development consultancy firm. He also holds a PhD in, I wrote this on, high performance psychology, which I found fascinating. I didn't even know that that PhD existed. And so then with David, we have Justin Fallon, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Blue Case. And he describes himself as a lifelong student and teacher of what brings out the best in people, which just made me smile reading it. So I'd like to toss over to David and Justin and let you say a little bit more about yourselves. David, if you want to pick it up.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that introduction and thank you for having us today. Yeah, so I have a PhD in a field called high performance psychology. So it looks at why do certain teams and individuals perform at exceptional levels, even in suboptimal circumstances. And I'm the founder of Blue Case and also the co-author of our book, Be a Better Team by Friday.
And I am Justin Fallon. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Blue Case, author of Be a Better Team by Friday. And David and I have been working together for many years to apply that high performance psychology and combine it with strategic planning, leadership development, and performance coaching to excel teams, excel companies, and the leaders who run them.
Excellent.
I'm curious, how did you, like, your paths cross with Blue Case? Like, how did it start?
Well, I'll go back even further. Before I met David, I was a student at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and I graduated from school and I did not know what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I was working in the banquet hall at the Alumni Center at the school and had the good fortune to be a server on the very first night of the very first game of the basketball season, the year that the coach, Roy Williams, came from the University of Kansas to take over losingest team in the history of the school.
Wow.
And so I was there in the back of the room and I was watching him talk to each of these guys in a way that was so inspiring that I felt like I could win a national championship, which obviously I'm not going to be a national championship basketball player, but I felt like I could be that day.
That's amazing.
And, you know, he ended up taking that same team, losingest team in the history of the school, to win a national championship. Same five guys. So I have always been fascinated. What is that? What is it that has someone able to bring out the best in people? And I have spent my career focusing on that. And I eventually became a performance coach. I was working with TEDx speakers, in fact, and visionary CEOs. I was working with poker players, athletes, just to get that peak performance state. And David and I met because I had been at a party at his house and I was looking at the library books that he had in his library and every single one of them, either I had read or I wanted to read. And I was like, I got to meet this guy. And so we quickly became friends and we were friends much longer than our partnership was established. And David really started this business and brought me in to help grow it from a small one person shop to really the firm that we are today. And we've been doing that together for about 8 years, a little over 8 years. Company was founded in 2013 though.
That's fantastic. That's a great story too. I love that finding inspiration in that moment and the sense that you took from that, like feeling like, oh my God, I could go do this too. And
yeah, absolutely.
I think it says so much about that person's leadership skills, absolutely. Right? And what they yeah. were conveying energetically. Yeah. That's powerful. It is. And yeah, I one of the things that I saw y'all had noted, I think the ideal of like taking groups sort of from mediocrity to excellence. And in that sense of when you're talking about working with leaders and sort of helping to develop them towards, you know, building more innovative businesses or even just businesses that are just running better, like what, I was wondering if you could talk about like, what does the mediocrity look like and how do people sort of know that they're just mediocre, you know, like where does that awareness come in and how do y'all help them identify that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question. So, you know, when Gallup does these surveys of businesses, they find that about 70% of the workforce is disengaged. So you have only 30% of the people. So you're paying for 100% of the people, but only 30% of your dollars that are spent on wages are actually driving the business forward. The rest is really a waste. And the business oftentimes can be performing well with even just 30%. They can be making money. They can be moving forward, have happy customers. But from an efficiency perspective, it really is mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening oftentimes is that the CEO is noticing that. He or she is noticing, like, why do things take so long? You know, things are getting thrown over to the fence, the executive team. There seems to be conflict. There's communication challenges, like, and they'll often say, well, I guess every business just must have communication challenges. But part of what they're noticing is that you have a workforce that is not engaged. And so you have innovation, creativity, intelligence that's inside the company, but it's currently offline.
Mm.
And so part of what we want to do when we come in is we take that 70% or whatever percent it is, maybe it's 50%, and put it online. But the way you notice it oftentimes is both qualitative and quantitative.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's issues like they're not, maybe not hitting their growth numbers, or they're growing but not quickly enough. Or you just, you know, things just quite aren't, it doesn't feel like you have the same edge that when you initially started the company, there was like a sense of edge. And now it feels like you've gotten soft in the middle.
When you come into an environment and you're working with like a leadership team, is there usually like one person that's sort of championing the work more than others? Or is everybody on the same, like how... When you're coming into those environments, maybe somebody has had, the CEO has had some awareness, but is the COO or the CFO, are they always on the same page together? Do you find that they have that same awareness too, or do you have to help raise awareness in those situations?
Well, the CEO is always the person that brings us in. So it might be maybe the head of people will come in and introduce us, but the CEO is the one who's championing it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the CEO might not even know exactly what the issue is. They're just noticing like, God, this doesn't, I know, like we should be doing, we're incredible. Our product's incredible. Our team's incredible. Why aren't we doing better, right? And they oftentimes do have different perspectives. So when we actually talk, we do interviews at the beginning of our engagements. And when we talk to people, they sort of describe slightly different companies. Yeah. Like we'll say, what's the biggest in the way in the company? And what are the initiatives? What are the most important initiatives? And they'll describe the initiatives differently, even teams that are close. And they'll oftentimes describe some of the problems differently as well. And part of what we want to do is we want to bring out all these different perspectives, because the reality is everybody's right,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody's, you know, has their perspective actually has some validity in it. It's mm-hmm. not that the CEO is wrong.
Right.
It's just, you know, he or she has a particular vantage point, just like I'm looking this way and you're looking this way. And
it's more like expanding
right, and bringing like, all those together. Exactly.
That makes
exactly.
sense.
So oftentimes they do have different perspectives, and it's not, but that's actually very healthy, and we want that, because yeah. that's actually how you can see the whole, when you mm-hmm. can bring everyone's perspective together and have it be heard and have it be understood and acknowledged. And that's a key part of kind of how we work together.
Yeah.
So I have a question about, you know, like building on that in like our current climate, like how there's a lot of uncertainty around political or even like economic, and it's like impacting people's personal lives and work lives like hand in hand. So how can you work with leaders? How does your work with leaders like help them like usher in a new mindset for themselves and to, like, you know, help empower their employees to change their mindsets?
Well, when we talk about mindsets, I think that one of the things, you know, you hear a lot about mindsets. You hear about the growth mindset, for instance. It's really important. If you're in a fixed mindset, you think to yourself, oh, I can't get any better at this skill that I'm that I'm working at. And if you're in a growth mindset, you're thinking, hey, I'm not that good. You know, I'm working on this TED talk that I'm doing. At first, I'm like, oh, I cannot memorize. I cannot do it. And that's going on in my head.
Yeah.
It's going on in everybody's head at some point. It's called the negativity bias. You know, you're just naturally, we're sort of programmed to be focusing on these negative things. It helps protect us, but it limits us. So those mindsets, you know, we know that, especially those of us who are leaders, we know you got to be able to shift your mindset. You don't just go to a class and shift your mindset one time.
Yeah.
You shift your mindset probably every day, multiple times a day, because you're seeing that voice going through your head. So,
you know, it's interesting. I just dealt with something very personally on this level where, you know, my daughter was in the hospital and she kept saying, I want to leave. I want to leave. And I told her finally, I'm like, if you keep saying, I want to leave, you will stay. What you need to say is, I want to get better. Because when you get better, you get to leave. And it's just this mindset of shifting, because all you're focusing on in that one space is what you can't do, what you can't control. But if you shift into what you can control, then you're more empowered. And she said, you know, immediately she was like, that makes sense. She was like, but it's sometimes we are just stuck in our own heads, right? We have these voices that they just are telling us these things and we can't get out of our own way. Sometimes that extra perspective, bringing in that extra perspective makes a huge difference to kind of help just where your own mind is, I think.
Definitely. And I think that kind of when you're talking about, well, how do you help teams get better at this? One of the things that we really focus on is coaching teams to be able to coach each other to shift their mindset, to choose a different mindset. And, you know, we were working with a team where it was like one thing after another was going wrong. It, you know, they were working so hard and then they lost a file that they had been working on. They lost the file. And so suddenly all their work has disappeared. Now, naturally, you're going to have a team whose mindset has just kind of plummeted in that situation.
Yeah.
But we were working with this team to be practicing coaching each other. So there were four of them on the team and, you know, three of them would be still in a positive mindset by the other one saying, no, it's hopeless. We can't do it. And then it would be like, you know, how do you help that person come back? No, there is a possibility still. We're going to recreate what we had done. And then that team, you know, another person would kind of go into the disempowered mindset and then they're coaching that person. So when you have a high performance team, you're all coaching each other to come back. And don't expect anyone to stay in 100% of the time. You just help each other back.
That was one of my favorite aspects reading the book, hearing how it seems like your work really rallies behind connecting with everyone in the organization, starting with the top. Stephanie and I are both big believers that leadership like really drives the culture of the organization. But when you mentioned everyone's coaching each other, that is so empowering.
Yeah,
like you can actually, like if I am down and Stephanie's up, she could really coach me through that negativity bias. So I find that to not only, you know, position leadership to do, you know, to actually lead by example, but it also creates individual leaders within the organization. When your organization also leads, and it makes it more like, I guess maybe you can grow faster or have like better outcomes. How did you figure that out? I guess that aspect of like your like strategy and your consulting.
Well, when we first started working with executive teams, we were focusing on their strategy, and what was happening is they were starting to grow. So it was working. Their strategy led to better alignment on the team. They started to be able to execute inside their set goals. And what they found was as they grew, they're coming back to us saying, hey, how do we get it so that the executive team is not the only ones doing this stuff? And how do we get it out to our next level leaders? How do we see more ownership happening in the company, not just on our team? We can't have it where the executive has to do everything or make all the decisions. We need the next level leaders to step up. So that's really where we started to expand our business, was taking the work that we're doing with the executive teams and bringing together all of the directors and managers in the company and anyone who's a leader in the company to work on cross-functional problems together. So how do they work together? Not like in marketing and engineering, for instance. Mm-hmm. When you got a marketing team and an engineering team, a lot of times there's a lot of tension and conflict and competing commitments between those two. How do we break down those silos and work together collectively as an organization to better move towards those goals? So we created very easy to apply one-page tools, brought them to all those directors and managers, and then taught them how to teach those tools to the people that worked on their teams. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make sure that everything that we did was self-propagating inside the organization. So they were learning how to be a coaching style manager, and they were learning how to teach the tools that enable this kind of collaboration. And as we did that, you started to see it kind of rippled out from the executive team into the organization. And that's what really turns on the jet fuel effect, if you will, in order to kind of make things go faster and get better.
Yeah. So, and just a story about that. So years ago, we were working with the CEO, and the executive team was pretty aligned, but there was, they had done some layoffs, and some of the team was still kind of stuck on that. Mm-hmm. The morale was down a little bit. People had different concerns and about the business. The CEO at that time was new. There was some, you know, can we trust her fully? There were some new executive team members. There was a lot of these different issues going on. And part of what we did is when we came in and we worked with their top leaders, we gave them these tools, and the CEO had them go and share them and teach them to the entire organization. And right after, even after the 2 days that we spent with the team was a different team. Like, they came in one team, kind of like a little bit fragmented, a little bit like, you know, beat up, almost like when a team that is not performing well comes in at halftime, mm-hmm. you know, and the mm-hmm. And then they leave, and then they're fired up, and they
come back
the
a different team.
They come back a different team. It was like that. It was like they came in one team and they unified as a team, and then they were empowered with these very behavioral things that they had practiced with themselves, and then went out and started sharing with the company. And it created an entire new, we call like a leadership operating system, so that people knew how to communicate with each other, and they knew how to build relationships, and how do you create high levels of engagement really quickly when you don't have time, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious, when y'all are describing all this, when you go into these environments, and obviously you're there to solve problems, so problems exists, and does resistance come up? And if it does, what does it look like as you're going through this process? Like, what, I'm just curious, like, how that shows up in the process.
Resistance comes up. The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Resistance comes up.
It's my favorite topic. I'm sorry.
It's like you're just the guy to handle it.
Yeah. No.
Does it ever not come up?
I remember a time I was standing in front of a room, and a lot of times this happens to people like us, where we stand in front of the room at first. You know, I was standing in front of this room, and it was a company that had done an acquisition. So it was basically a merger, mm-hmm. And it was 2 years after the deal had happened. Oh, wow. So they brought the company 2 years later. They are still having all of the problems that inevitably come with mergers and acquisitions unless you work with people like us. There's conflicts between the old companies. They're basically still operating like two companies. They got one t-shirt that says the company name. But when I'm standing up there and I'm saying, okay, who worked?
Split in two different
companies. Exactly. Yeah. Who worked at the company B and who worked at company A? They all just raise their hands. You know who worked at each company. And so I'm standing in front of the room and I'm saying, well, today we're going to break down the silo, and we're going to have a completely open and honest conversation among us all. And it is like crossed arms, you know, looking at me like, you know, you better go home, or, you know, we're going home. I mean, they're not there to do that. There's a lot of skepticism, a lot of resistance, mm-hmm. and with each other too, because they've got all the personality conflicts. And so what we did was we brought in the first thing that we do in most of our engagements. We teach listening to understand. We taught it, we practiced it. And by the end of that day, you saw the silos in that room start to dissolve. People were talking to each other in a way they'd never been talking to each other. They were getting feedback from each other, and their minds were blown. They had no idea what it was like for people across the line. And so they started listening to each other. 9 months later, that company's engagement scores had gone up 40 points in 9 to 10 months, and it's higher than it had ever been. And we were doing that work with them over the course of that time. It's about listening to understand. But so yes, the resistance is there, but that's gonna start to shift as people experience, hey, things can actually be different and actually be better, and we're not just a random. We know what we're doing, you know, and as that trust builds with us, with our tools, things really start to change. So I go from being the least liked person in the room to, you know, making friends with everybody.
I can't imagine you ever being the least liked person.
I'm telling you. Yeah, you have really a generous perspective of me.
No, there was coughing. When Justin was talking up in front of the room, there was coughing. I don't know if you've heard this cough, but like, you know, everyone was like this. And they got the bullshit cough. You were saying, this is what we're going to do. So that was happening, you know?
Wow.
And there was even resistance on the executive team too. There was conflict between, you know, two of the executives on the team that was very high as well, that had to be addressed.
I mean, in my experience working with businesses, that executive level conflict often is what's creating a lot of the toxicity to begin with, you know? And so what is that like for y'all in terms of, are you going in and sort of mediating those executives together? Are you working with them individually and then together? Or is it, do you address that conflict like just head on? Like, how do you approach it when it's kind of the heads that are really, you know, at, I guess, butting heads?
Yeah. Well, you're entirely right. Sort of it starts at the top, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't have a healthy and aligned executive team, it doesn't even make sense to do anything in the organization. Mm-hmm. So part of what we always are beginning with the executive team with interviews to understand what's going on. What are all the unsaid conversations? What are all the things that are undiscussable that you can't talk about? Like we get what those conversations are, so that by the time we're in the room, we know the conversations that are happening well and the conversations that are not happening well. And we address it right away. Because the organization is a reflection of the CEO and his or her executive team. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the company that, the story that Justin was talking about, there were two leaders who on the team that had a hard time even being in the same room together.
Wow.
I mean, it was that level of conflict. And to your point, what was going on is not only was there conflict with their two, with the two of them, but then their functions, guess what? Weren't collaborating really well.
Absolutely.
And it was an additional
Well, and it creates weird loyalties and people, I mean, as it trickles down, it really does like affect that culture in such a substantial way.
It's so interesting that like our human behaviors get in the way of what we're all in business to do, you know, like we're driving profit revenue in business and here we are, there's like division within the organization. So I find that pretty interesting. So would you say, is it like the lack of like listening deeply? Is it more like what is the root cause for these like instances where there's not alignment?
I want to tack on to her question. And has business always been this way? Or is this something that's like, are we in a new era of business being more toxic? Like, just from y'all's perspective, is this something that we've just never addressed and we're addressing now? Or is this something that's gotten worse?
Well, you know, our book is called Be a Better Team by Friday. And I was telling somebody what the book was about. They asked, what's the book about? And I said, well, it's about, you know, how to work better together and how to collaborate, even when you have different personality styles and different people that you know at various levels. And they said, oh, you mean the hard part about work.
That's funny.
You know, I think that's really important because it is hard work. They call it soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. They are the hardest skills. How to work with people is much more challenging for the most brilliant engineers than the code that they know. I mean, these are hard skills because human nature is that it's not that, here's how I would think about it. So every person that's working in your organization, every single human being has a desire to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like this innate drive that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're really in an environment that aligns with that desire, and you got the right mindsets and you got the right tools and you got the right people that you're working with, it brings something out that's extraordinary. It's those national champion mm-hmm. basketball players becoming national champions. Well, that's happening in a marketing department, in an mm-hmm. engineering department, in a operations department. There's everyone has that in them when they're aligned with it. But what gets in the way of that is, first of all, our own inner mm-hmm. mindsets and chatter and stuff that gets in the way, defeats negativity bias about ourselves. But then competing commitments with others inside of the organization, competing priorities, and a belief that those who we disagree with are just wrong.
That judgment of right or wrong.
Judgment of
versus
right or wrong,
kind of being more open to perspective.
To really understanding that.
Yeah.
If I'm working with Shaniqua and Shaniqua's in HR and I'm in marketing, my priorities are completely different than Shaniqua's priorities. And so these head-to-head combats and silos are, no, we need to do one thing that's going to support HR's mission, and in marketing, we're saying we got to support something else. So it naturally creates conflict.
So I always found that really interesting in business. And for my whole time being in business, I never really understood that mentality. I was raised in sports. I was raised on teams. The priority is the same.
Right.
Right. The priority is to the customer. The priority is to the, you know, like what that, and so connecting people to their purpose within that priority, you know, to create those alignments, because I've worked in a lot of organizations where they were very siloed, and intuitively without being coached on my own, I would just go into these siloed groups. I always like to talk about compliance, you know, being a department that was like hated, and they were hated by marketing. And I was new to this environment. I didn't know what compliance was. So I just went and met with them. And every week I'd spend 4 hours with them and have them teach me about their department. And then we formed processes. And then all of a sudden it was like, we weren't getting these red line documents back, and we understood what compliance's needs were and that they were protecting us and keeping us safe. And it was like, why so much discord? And I think a lot of that is like, businesses don't take the time to help individual departments really see that direct line connection to how they impact the customer, you know, how they impact the purpose or the why of what that business is doing in a way that they feel it, you know, and they don't feel like they're just like a cog in a machine, and then they have to control their territory, and they have to, you know, all of those things. So yeah, I'm sorry. Those.
I feel like that's a great segue into the like adapt your work style.
Yes.
I'm just gonna say this, Justin. I felt called out when I was reading that. oh, you're talking about me. I'll see you later. But I was telling Stephanie earlier that I felt called out because I've been wanting people to adapt to the way I communicate. And then I realize if I'm a leader, then I need to figure out how to connect with that individual, how to motivate, what are their motivations, what are their whys, and reach them. So I'm curious, like, how, like, do you work? What is the adapt your work style in your perspective?
Well, it's a great segue, because we were working with a CEO who brought us in and said, can you just teach people how to communicate with me? I can just teach them. You know, that I think that's kind of everybody. You know, if everybody could just figure out how to get what I want, it'll be a much better place. And I, you know, my style is superior. That's just kind of how we're all thinking. And that's why it can be sometimes kind of a wake-up call when you realize, oh, there's actually all these different styles that are equally important, that have strengths that our team needs. So we're working with this company, and the CEO says, you know, can you teach my team how to communicate with me? And so we brought in the Tilt, and we weren't just going to only teach his team. We were going to teach him. We were going to teach his team. Mm-hmm. And so we worked with the Tilts, and what we found was he was what's called an impact style. That's what you both are saying. He was more of an impact style. So an impact style will prefer short, brief, 3 bullet point communications, focusing on why we're doing this and what are the results we're going to get. And that's what he was doing. And that makes it great for a good CEO. There's good CEOs with different styles, but a lot of times you'll find a CEO is that kind of person. They're very forward thinking. They want to make an impact, and they want to go quickly. His director of HR, who's the director at the time, she was very clarity oriented. So a clarity oriented person is going to be someone who does a lot of research, who's going to have a lot of data. And she was making elegant 10 slide decks every time she went to go talk to him. And after 5 minutes, he would just completely zone out of those decks. And then she would leave and she was totally disheartened, you know,
he'd be looking at his phone.
Totally checking out.
Yeah, I mean, really, wow. You know, looking down, looking at the clock.
You know. So it was kind of a know your audience situation. Like they didn't know each other as an audience.
It's hard sometimes to really get that. So we worked with her to, to really look at that style difference. Mm-hmm. And she was, so the next time that she went in to talk to him, she made 10 slides into 2 slides, 3 bullet points each, walks in. They have a conversation. It lasts about 10 minutes. They left. She says, that was the best meeting that we've ever had. And he said, that was the best meeting we've ever had. And then he got the report, the 10 slide report sent afterwards. And so he now had to go through on his time and be able to study that so that he could figure out how to connect with her style. So
that's great. So they're both getting their needs met in that situation. Yeah. That's... One thing that you said while you were describing that just made me question. So with the tilt or with the personality test and the outcomes, you mentioned, you know, that a lot of leaders tend to be this or that. Like, but is there can leaders be any? Like, can leaders come from any part of the quadrant? Or is it really that some lean more this or that? Like, what's your experience with that?
We've seen CEOs in all the different quadrants.
In all different quadrants.
And the idea is that you want to be agile or adaptable, that you actually want to be able to move depending on what's needed. Because at different times in the business, depending on where the business cycle is, you do need to change. Mm-hmm. So even the two of you being in impact, there's times where you might have to intentionally tilt structure, mm-hmm. or where you might actually need to slow down and move into clarity and do some research, or when you're doing outreach and, where you need to tilt into connection. We even noticed that in interacting with you when you were talking to us, you were tilting, you know, Shaniqua, you were tilting connection and making us feel welcome. So you're naturally want to be in that agile place. What's valuable about the tilt is noticing where our tendencies are and what your stress responses are, and also being able to understand others well. Because if you can speak someone else's language, it makes a huge difference. And if you know what's important to them, and this is like a cheat sheet, mm-hmm. you know, it's like when you buy an electronics or something and like it gives you this huge, I bought like a robot vacuum, you know, one of those Roombas, and like, it's this huge instruction manual that it's now a PDF. They don't even give it to you anymore, you know, and I'm not going to look. But there comes like a one page, like, okay.
Like all you want.
Here's how you turn it on, which is really all I know. And I still, you know, and like, that's all you care. Like, here's how you turn it on and whatever else you need to know. This is sort of like that. The tilt gives you, here's a key of 2 or 3 things that if you understand, you're going to be able to really understand, like, how do you work with someone well and what to do, what not to do.
I have a question. Yeah. How much of it is nature versus nurture, the tilt? Do you know?
Well, a piece of it, you know, is depending, it's interesting. Environment definitely shapes the tilt, right? Because if depending on what a person is doing, their tilt will look differently. Like if we all are sitting down and doing our taxes, impact style doesn't really help much.
Right.
Like you actually have to slow down and, you know, be organized and, you know, so if you're building a house, like in thinking about a house, you need to intentionally tilt structure. People's tilts can actually change. Pam Boney, who's the founder of Tilt, and she's a friend of ours. She was saying that actually your tilt can even change every 90 days. And that particularly if you're, intelligent, you're going to naturally start adapting because that's just what's needed.
It's not till early, you know, I've taken a lot of personality tests, and the Myers-Briggs test is obviously one that a lot of people are familiar with. And when I take it at work, I always come out J. When I take it at home, I always come out P. Mm-hmm. And I've done it so many times just to test it. But I do believe that environmental element does play a role in terms of like how you're showing up and the energy that you're bringing forward, you know, in those environments, like what's going to be useful, I think, to your needs.
Definitely.
So yeah, that's interesting that the tilt has that capacity to be able to like really, depending on where you're at and kind of this head frame, the headspace you're in and also the energy space you're in, really impacts the outcome.
That's, I think it's very valuable also to, to realize that we're adaptable.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people resist being put in a box because we're all bigger than that, right?
We are. Yes.
And the idea that, and the idea that, yeah, of course you can move and, you know, you're not like frozen in time. Like this is the only way you are. You have a lot of aspects of yourself, right?
A lot of, when I work with my clients, a lot, I work with persona archetypes and the idea that, you know, we can sort of access any energy. There's just certain energies we're more comfortable with.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with that. Adaptability is key. And I think for leadership, especially, the more adaptable you become, the more you're open to perspective because it allows more in, I think.
I do want to know, what are your tilt results?
Yeah. How do y'all
clarity,
tilt?
Clarity, structure.
Is that secret?
No, it's not secret. So, you know, so you have sort of two styles, right? You sort of have a primary tilt and a secondary tilt. And so I'm connection impact. Those are my styles.
And my styles are impact structure. And I do want to say one thing about the nature nurture thing. And also because we're talking about leadership styles and innovation, you know, these are all adaptable. We can all have different strengths. But one thing that I do find interesting is there's something called a stress response. And each of these tilt styles has its own stress response. And now while we can be adaptable with all the strengths, almost always when I describe the stress response, that's where someone will be like, oh, that's me. you know, so for instance, me being an impact person, I'm all about go, let's get, make it happen. But when I get stressed out, I get really omnipotent. I know everything and I don't want to hear anything else. And I'm not the most pleasant person in the room because I know that we need to move forward and I can know kind of tune everything else out and get that kind of controlling. If I'm in my structure, a structure tilt can be very micromanagey. Mm. And a clarity person who's very focused on research and data, they go into analysis paralysis and they just cannot, you know, they can't make a decision. And then a connection person kind of checks out and sort of goes into a daze.
Disconnects.
And a lot of times you don't even realize you're in a stress response. You think it's important. If you're a clarity person and you're analysis paralysis, you're like, no, we have to think about all of these details. We haven't thought about enough questions. And you're stopping the moving forward. Likewise with an impact person, like, no, if you just listen to me, we'd move a lot faster. That's a stress response.
I think that awareness is when we talk about building those soft skills, really developing that emotional intelligence and understanding like what's going on in your body and being able to identify that before you're actually responding, right? And going into that reaction mode.
Absolutely.
Take a beat, understand like, oh, wow, this energy is coming up inside me and this is what this means now. And I know what this means. And I know it's probably not going to get my needs met because I'm going to just, you know, bust out. And I think that that awareness is sort of what helps people, you know, develop that ability to just respond instead of, I don't like to use the word trigger. I really like to use the word activate, you know, to just get activated in a particular way emotionally that they don't feel empowered by, you know.
And I think we're working in environments that are extremely stressful.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, this isn't, it's not that people are getting stressed out because they're somehow less capable. It's actually that the environments that they're working in, especially the companies we're working in, if they're growing really fast, the pressure on the teams that are working inside these companies is getting higher and higher, and the complexities of the challenges grow as more people get added to the organization. So it's not that people are like bad at this because you know, they should be better. It's that almost anyone is going to start getting stressed inside of these environments. And so what you're talking about with self-awareness and the practice around understanding what's happening in your physical experience can be really helpful to modulate those stress responses. And we recommend mindfulness practice and, you know, practicing meditation of some kind to help.
We talk about business ethos a lot. And the foundations of ethos are logos and pathos. And of course, in business, logos takes the prize, right? Like, we're very logic driven. We put everything in boxes. We try to structure our, you know, we used to say like process takes away all emotion, right? If you can build a process, you don't need an emotion. And I think we've just gotten to a point where we've pushed that to its limit. And ethos, you know, requires pathos. We have to have that emotional intelligence to balance our logic. You know, that's where intuition comes from. That's where we develop that true intuition, where we're bringing in energetic information along with our knowledge and wisdom and all of that that we carry.
Absolutely.
We get that integrated, and then we become, I just think, stronger, more, you know, clearer. I'm curious, we're actually running it. This has been like, we could probably do a 2-hour podcast on this. I kind of want y'all to come back again for like part two, because I feel like we've got 27 more questions. Okay. But are there some final thoughts that maybe you could leave us with in terms of bringing innovation out in your own business? You know, like what leaders can be doing right now to be looking at helping their businesses become more innovative, or for themselves, you know, to help their businesses become more innovative. I was wondering if there's anything that you might want to add to that.
You know, one thing that anyone can do, whether you're running a company or whether you're working in a company, if you just did one thing, it's practicing listening tours, where you're going out, you're listening to people, you're asking what's going well, what's in the way, asking for feedback about yourself. What's one thing, one piece of advice that you have for me about how I could be better? And it's framed that way, because a lot of times your subordinates might be intimidated, but if you just say, what's one piece of advice, they can give you that. What's the highest, if we were working at our highest possible level, what would that look like? And really then practicing listening to understand. You know, you mentioned some of the challenges sort of like politically and sort of just like what's going on in our larger environment. And there is a lack of trust right now in institutions, in, you know, political institutions, but really in all institutions. Mm-hmm. Even in companies, there's less trust than there's ever been before. And one of the ways that you can begin to build that trust is to really practice listening to understand, just like your story when you went and were talking to compliance. You were actually in there with sort of a beginner's mind, listening to understand. You didn't have an agenda. It didn't matter that your role might have been, you know, higher than some of those people. You basically were just coming in and saying, teach me, I want to understand. And that built tremendous amounts of relationship. Mm-hmm. That then dissolved a lot of the conflict and allowed you to the business to be more innovative. So a lot of the way that you get access to the innovation and the creativity is by listening. And once you have that open line, then people can say, hey, you know something, that I know I'm new here, but you know something that doesn't make sense to me, that I think could be a lot. There's a faster way to do this. People are having those conversations, mm-hmm. but they're not having them oftentimes with the leaders mm-hmm. you know, with the CEO and the executive team. They usually might have it with their spouse, their friend, they might on a lunch break. Isn't this stupid that we do it this way? It'd be so much faster. We're wasting so much money on here. Why don't we do this? So when you start listening to understand and start practicing these listening tours, what winds up happening is now you get to hear those conversations. Hmm. And some of those conversations come from brand new employees. Some of them come from people that have been there for a long time. Some of them come from a department that doesn't actually know that much about another department. And it can come from anywhere. And this allows you to be a part of that dialogue and a part of that conversation. And so it becomes a lot more free flowing, rather than just like people are having an innovative conversation over here or over here.
Yeah. I love that idea of listening tour. Like, just kind of scoping your whole environment and being present. I think it's very important.
Justin?
Yeah.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know.
Well, you know, I was thinking your podcast is called From Illumination to Innovation. And I did want to hear more about illumination. I think illumination is an interesting idea. Did you want to say?
Yeah. So originally, you know, I do what I call shadow work. And I specifically work with companies on what I call brand shadows. So the things that they don't like to describe, or they don't, you know, they want to maybe market their way out of a situation, or, you know, just avoid dealing with. And so for me, illumination is about illuminating that shadow and bringing things into the light, that we can't really truly innovate and solve problems if we're avoiding things, that oftentimes those are the things that activate us unexpectedly or create challenges, you know, where we have behavior patterns where we're like, why does the same thing just keep happening to me over again? And, you know, why does our company just not move forward in this particular way? So for me, illumination is really about illuminating that shadow so that we can innovate, so that we can be more open and you know, free.
Cool. Well, what I was going to talk about is directly related to that, illuminating the shadow in a team environment. There's what we're saying to each other, and then there's what we're not saying to each other.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what's not being said to each other is being said after 3 beers.
Yes, it is.
After work with other people.
Or on some online forum where it's being published out.
Or there's that. Yeah. Hopefully we're at a point where it's still in the beer conversation. Yeah,
before it gets the glass door. Before it gets the glass door. But, you know, glass door changed things for businesses in a lot of ways.
It did. So you know, and I think for instance, an executive team, you've got your saids and your unsaids, and there's a lot of elephants in the room that people can't say. Mm. And, you know, we like to say that you can go from a level one conversation, which is nice and everyone's just being polite, to level 10, which is the unsaids are being said. The things that really need to be talked about are really being talked about. It's the moment that we're in front of a room and I'm saying, okay, y'all, what is the level of conversation we're having right now? And everyone raises their hand and they show a 6. And I say, okay, well, what needs to be said to get us to a level 10? And it's really quiet and nobody wants to talk until finally someone says, the reason we can't get anything done is because the CEO is controlling every aspect of our work. Mm. And when the room is quiet after that, there is an opportunity for 2 things to happen. One, the CEO can jump in and defend himself, can say, that's absolutely not true. You know, here's why that's not right. Or the CEO can say, wow, I did not know that. Mm. And welcome the environment to create psychological safety, to be able to have those level 10 conversations where we can actually say what we see is going on. And so when you can start having the level 10, as you're talking about, the shadow, the stuff that's not being said, it comes up. And it's, in my experience, often it evaporates. Mm. And it actually creates a clearing for a new kind of conversation. And that's why people will say, after we work with them, it's like a breath of fresh air. They couldn't breathe until...
Shadow's always scarier than you think it is. It always is. And yeah, I agree with that. It does evaporate once it's finally out and exposed.
And welcomed. It really has to be welcomed.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of power and energy in that shadow. Mm. That's valuable. It's not, you know, even though it may be creating challenges, there's a lot of information and energy there to work with. And so when it's revealed, it really does create opportunity. It really does create possibilities that weren't there before. They just simply weren't there, or they couldn't be seen.
And it's part of also what engages the workforce, because you can feel it, right? You can feel like if something feels stuck when you walk into a workplace, you can sort of get the sense.
Stagnant.
And something. And if it's open, if people are having those honest conversations, you can speak up, if you can be your full self, and you know, and be a human being and make mistakes and learn.
Yes.
Then it's very attractive to employees and they want to stay. They're like, this feels great. I like being at work. I had a great, it's made me feel I can bring my whole self. I can, mm-hmm. I actually can contribute.
We call it vibrating higher. Like, yeah. Our goal is to help businesses vibrate because you can feel that energy, that vibration,
vibrating
when it's
higher.
Really working like that.
Yeah. And
that low vibration energy, you can feel that too. What do you think?
I am overwhelmed with just this positive experience with you two. I think that we should wrap things up though. So, but thank you so much for joining us today. I feel that this conversation is very illuminating for me regarding, you know, this leadership style of, it seems like more accountability and ownership, and then that trickles down into the organization. So thanks so much for your time. And this was a great read. Oh, I listened to it on Audible.
I'm reading it. I've got it bookmarked. I'm just really quick before we wrap, if people want to follow y'all, learn more about y'all, can you give some details on how people can keep track of what y'all are doing?
Yep. Our book, Be a Better Team by Friday, is on Amazon. Our our company website is bluecase.com. My name is Justin Fallon, and I'm on LinkedIn at Justin Fallon. And David?
And I'm David B. Greenspan, and I'm connected to the Bluecase LinkedIn as well, so you can find me there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today and bringing your wisdom. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you both.
Yeah, thank you
for having us.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our show. Show us your support by following us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
You can also find us on Castus at fromilluminationtoinnovation.castus.com. If you love our show, share it with your friends and coworkers too. Let's all work together to help businesses vibrate higher.